Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to a very special episode of The Interviews. And this one has been 10 years in the making, folks. Well, maybe a couple of weeks. Well, actually, when you factor in the editing time, it's only really been a couple of hours. But nevertheless, it has been an epic journey because this is our interview special for The Odyssey. That's right, Christopher Nolan's eagerly awaited adaptation of the epic Homer poem in which Matt Damon's Odysseus embarks on a torturous 10-year journey home after the Trojan War. It's finally here. It's been years in the making. It opens in cinemas today, Friday, July 17th. You may even be watching it as I record this, you lucky, lucky people, because it is very much worth the wait. I spoke to two pairs of actors for the special, and you're going to hear them in the order in which I did them. First up, we have Himesh Patel and John Leguizamo, who play two men whose loyalty to Odysseus manifests in very different ways throughout the film. Patel, who is returning to the Nolan fold after appearing in Tenet, plays Eurylochus, Odysseus' right-hand man on the journey home. And Leguizamo, a Nolan newbie, plays Eumaeus, a sheep herder who stands fast on Ithaca awaiting Odysseus' return. I spoke to them both about the Nolan experience, and while we don't do any major reveals, there is some discussion about certain scenes and specific moments, so maybe do wait to hear this until after you've come back from your own Odyssey. Oh, and obviously we start off by talking about the World Cup, which may be coming to an end now, but back then was in full swing, and Leguizamo had just been seen at a game along with Matt Damon. Had a blast doing this. Do please enjoy.
Himesh, John, welcome to the Emperor Podcast. How are you both?
Great, yeah.
Awesome to be here, yeah.
Good. Before we talk about the film, I want to talk about the World Cup, because obviously this movie opens on the weekend of the World Cup final. And John, I know you were at a game recently.
France, Sweden, and Colombia, Portugal.
Two games.
I'm going to the finals, but a special club.
Oh my God, that's pretty amazing. How was it?
Oh my God, Colombia winning was insane. And Matt came down.
Right.
Because, you know, he wanted support. It was incredible. I mean, everybody was flipping out. There was so much yellow at the stadium in Florida, because every Colombian in America went there. Like, it was like 70,000 people.
Wow. Do you lose yourself when they score? Do you go
Oh my
nuts?
God, screaming, yelling, crying. How can you not, man?
It's an emotional
sport.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Himesh wouldn't know that. He's a Spurs fan. He wouldn't know.
Trust me, I know emotions.
You're a Spurs fan?
Mostly I know, why.
Pain.
But there's been suffering. You know, we won a trophy.
That's true,
just over a year ago.
That's very, very true, indeed. Yeah. But you didn't get the World Cup, did you? Because the last time we spoke, you were heading to New York for an event, but you didn't get to go to a game.
But I watched the England game the other day during our lunch break in New York, when Harry scored that amazing winner. And I just thought, like, that's why he's one of the greatest of all time.
That's football out of the way. Yes. Let's talk about the Odyssey. When did your Odyssey begin, and how did it begin? Himesh, obviously you'd worked with Chris Nolan before. Mm-hmm. So did you get a phone call?
I got a call from my agents saying, you know, Chris is offering you a role in his next movie. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, it was just an offer? Because I auditioned for Tenet, and I didn't think I'm sick. But and then I had to wait a few days for him to call me and tell me what it was, because my agents had no idea. No one knew at that point. And he told me what it was that we were doing, the role I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that I might want to do a few push-ups. and I tried, but and away we went about a month or so later.
Oh, wow. So now once you're in the Chris Nolan club, you audition once and then he just goes, I want that.
I mean, it seems to be the way for me. I feel eternally privileged, you know, to have been a part of a movie like this and not have had to audition is just such a huge privilege. And I'd be thankful for it for the rest of my life. Yeah.
Amazing. And John, what was your experience? Was it a clandestine meeting in an underground car park, or did you get a call?
It was kind of like that, actually. Yeah, because, you know, I get a call.
He stood in the shadows.
Waiting for the code word.
Code word is Eumaeus.
You know, they said he was interested in me for a role, and then we met for lunch. He had a meet with me first to see, I guess, if I could eat properly, or I'm not sure what it was. But he started to talk to me about the role and what it demanded. You know, there was a lot of exposition. Can you make it conversational? He's the most loyal character in Western literature, yada, yada. I'm like getting too excited. And at the end of the 2-hour lunch, he offered me the part. And, you know, I try to act cool and whatnot. Like, yeah, that's great. But inside I was like, I ran home, called all my friends, you know, hugged my wife, you know, kissed her, whatever.
Because it's a big deal once you get into,
it is
into
a big
the Norman camp. Yeah. How much did you know about Emmaus, first of all, before?
I mean, I read the Odyssey as a kid, and I read it in college again, but I didn't remember Eumaeus as the most, I didn't remember Argus.
Yeah.
You know, those are like harder parts to like absorb, but the way he created this role, this real guy who protects his son, teaches him about his dad, takes care of the dog, the property, and feels like he's a surrogate son to him. You know, when he comes back, he's filled with so much pain and emotion and vulnerability that's what I had to live up to.
And it's Eurylochus, is your character, Himesh. Mm-hmm. And what did you know about him? Did you do a lot of research once you were offered the role?
I mean, I read the Odyssey, having never read it in its full form. And I was just waiting for Eurylochus to be mentioned. And then he's mentioned like once when he does something very stupid. And then that's it. So I was very thankful that he'd beefed the role up in this adaptation. But what it adds, I think, is that it adds a level of depth to him, in a sense of people know him as this guy who does a thing that isn't a great idea and doesn't help the cause of trying to get home. But the reality that we built into this version is that it's the culmination of this erosion of faith in his king, in his leader. And it's actually a really heartbreaking thing that he decides that this isn't working.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to take matters into my own hands. We are going to have to take matters into our own hands. You know, I really loved that moment before Cersei's palace, would you call it? But when he's, you know, he asks, is this a mutiny? And Eurylochus says, that's up to you. You know, it's really heartbreaking, and it's, I mean, it's an example of his great writing, isn't it?
Yeah, beautiful.
It strikes me both characters, in a way, are both examining the concept of loyalty,
because
they're both very loyal to Odysseus, and until, in your case, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, you can see the conflict in that relationship, whereas Eumaeus is someone who is absolutely unflinchingly, unstintingly loyal to this guy. And I know, John, from previous interviews you've done, that you felt that was fairly easy to be loyal to Matt.
You know, Matt is like, you expect this movie star, you know, with attitude, you know, privilege, entitlement, but that's not Matt. Matt's a regular guy, hangs out, cracks jokes, it takes care of you. He's an amazing dude. So it was easy to transfer my feelings of my own kids to Matt and make him my surrogate son.
Yeah.
And then with Chris being there, you know, Chris stands right there at the camera. Mm. So when you're doing these intimate scenes, you really feel like you're in great hands and safe hands to be as vulnerable or as emotional as you have to be. And, you know, and I let myself go, you know, I let myself be as painfully vulnerable as I could be.
How much older than yourself are you playing in this role?
I'm playing like hopefully 30 years older. Okay, maybe not so much, but I look haggard as fuck.
Yeah, and he's obviously a man who's he's sight impaired as well.
Right, right. So they built these contacts. Yeah. Louisa Abel, who's a brilliant makeup artist. You know, they're hand painted by only one person in L.A. And you know, and then I can't see at all. You know, I have to be taken to places, to the bathroom and everything. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I can find myself in the bathroom. I just need to be taken.
You don't need an assistant.
Yeah. The other stuff, you're good. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I got that. Yeah, I got that.
Himesh, I mean, you guys are put through the ringer in this. Mm. There's a lot of physical stuff, a lot of physical action, a lot of water as well, a lot of being shunted around on the open seas.
Yeah.
It was fun day at the office.
So fun, though. Very fun.
Yeah.
Hard, of course, physically the most demanding thing I've ever done.
Thank God you did those push-ups.
Yeah. Or did I? But I'll let the audience be the judge of that. It was a thrill, you know. It was tough. Of course, at times it was tough.
Yeah.
But that's because Chris wants that sort of visceral quality, which we all know from his filmmaking, but this takes it to another level. When you see us at sea, when you see the boat sort of crashing over the waves,
it is actually doing that,
you know, and some of the guys are not feeling great in that boat, you know,
what do you call it, vomit on one side,
so there was a point where there was a day in Scotland where the boat was moving quite a lot in the water, but it was still deemed safe for us to go out. But we got, that's where we got a lot of that sort of the movement on the boat. On one side of the boat, you've got a bunch of the guys throwing up who just they get seasick. They can't help it. On the other side of the boat, a bunch of us were just staring at these dolphins that had come out alongside the boat. So, yeah, we were just talking about this vomit and dolphins is kind of
the theme of the whole movie. Like
we were saying that'll be our Hearts of Darkness documentary. Yeah, yeah. It'll be called Vomit and Dolphins.
Because it is that beautiful to be in all these locations, but they're tough locations, man. I mean, being on in Favignana, 900 feet above sea level, you had to climb up that thing. I mean, I can only do it one day because it's like an hour. And I took the helicopter the following day, but everything was poisonous on top of there. You could fall off this cliff, but it was safe. Yeah. We had the most amazing stunt crew that in the history of stunting, who made sure that we were all safe at all times.
Wow. And Chris obviously leads from the front as well.
Absolutely.
There have been stories over the years that the chairs are banned on Chris Nolan's sets. Obviously, you're sitting on chairs right now. Mm-hmm. So this is luxury for you guys.
Yeah, I sat on rocks, on and stones. Yeah.
You're welcome to sit down on whatever's available to you. Okay. They're not gonna
deny you that. No.
But they're not gonna carry a chair in.
No.
Do you get fined if you're on a chair or something?
No, because they're whatever you're there. Sitting on is available for you to sit on. So, you know, I imagine when you were filming in the palace.
Yeah. Oh, there were seats everywhere. Benches and stools. Yeah, yeah. Whatever was period and available, that's what you're going to sit on.
You can have a sneaky sit down. Yeah. What's the best piece of direction Chris Nolan gave you both?
I mean, sometimes you just need the simplest form of the note. And there was a shot in Greece where it's myself sort of interrogating this one Greek guy. It's an amazing actor, who, you know. And we ran it once, and then we were going to go again. And obviously with these IMAX mags, there's only 2.5 minutes in the mag. So Chris had to ask the camera assistant how long is left in the mag. And she was like, look, if they do it like that, we're going to go over. It's going to roll out. But we could go a bit faster. Or then Hoyta was like, well, I could try this. And some of the other guys were like, well, we could try this. And Chris just went, and just pointed to the three of us in the scene and went, faster, faster, faster. And we got it. You know, sometimes it is that simple.
Yeah. Very, very George Lucas. I love that. Mm-hmm. John?
For me, it was a scene where Matt has come back and I'm not sure it's him, but I think it's him. And I'm in the bed and I'm freezing cold. And I said, I want to try this thing. And I'm not sure. So, you know, this sort of feverish dream, barely audible. And he said, go for it. Just do it. And then we'll see. We can always do another take. And so you felt so safe to try stuff. If it doesn't work, then I'll be more audible and more articulate. But, you know, it was good that I was able to, like, bring it down to a place that may not even be heard.
Amazing. Because I guess when you take a role like this and you don't audition per se, I mean, you had a lunch with Chris and Himesh, you got the call after having worked with him previously. When you get to set on day one, is there a sense of fear, because you haven't auditioned, you haven't necessarily placed yourself in the role before you get to set? So what's your preparation like? Do you turn up the set going, can I do this?
Well, you've been with Chris a lot. I mean, you spend a lot of time. Chris is very hands-on and he wants reality. He wants things to be truthful.
Yeah.
And so he's checking the hair, the special effects makeup, the contacts, the costumes, everything. He's there with you.
So you feel protected once
you walk. So you feel like we're going after the same thing. It's pure reality. Yeah. So you feel so confident on day one. The only thing that was different for me was I never worked with an IMAX camera. I know you did.
Yeah.
So that was kind of daunting.
Just the size,
size of it. You know your face is going to be like extremely large. So you are aware of that and you feel like this extra little bit of pressure to make sure that everything's even extra real.
Yeah. One last question for you both. Do you have an odyssey in your lives? Do you have something that has taken has consumed you for 10, 15, 20 years that maybe you still haven't achieved?
I mean, look, I'd love to, I'm working on writing right now, but trying to sort of like give yourself that confidence to go, okay, I can do it and just give it a go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've been trying to write scripts since I was like a 16-year-old, like since I've learned what that is and that you can do it. But I haven't yet sort of done anything that's sort of ended up being made or that I felt the confidence to do. And I've barely written anything, really. So the odyssey for me is sort of just building that confidence and sort of a permission to oneself to do it, you know?
Amazing. Yeah. John?
Well, I'm an activist in America. So I've been trying to get equal opportunity for Latin people in America. And I've been doing that my whole life. My mom was an activist as well. You know, we're the largest ethnic group in America after white people, and yet we're virtually invisible.
I wish you all the best with that.
Thank you.
As well. And Himesh, with your writing also.
Thank you.
Guys, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much
pleasure.
For your time.
Thanks, man.
Sorry to bring this all down.
No.
I was like, all of a sudden, I killed the energy in the room.
And that was Himesh Patel making his second Empire podcast appearance in just a matter of weeks after playing Dr. Watson in Enola Holmes 3, and John Leguizamo, who has taken nearly 10 years to fix John Wick's car. One day. One day. Last, but certainly not least, we have Odysseus himself and his son, Telemachus, which I can say now, but I banjaxed royally during this interview, with Matt Damon, who plays Odysseus, the grizzled warrior battling a sea of torment and doubt as he tries to make his way home, and Tom Holland, who plays Telemachus, the son eagerly hoping to reconnect with the father he never knew. This is Damon's third Chris Nolan rodeo, having appeared in both Interstellar and Oppenheimer, and Holland's first, and the father-son duo were on cracking form. Enjoy.
Matt, Tom, welcome to the Emperor Podcast. How are
Thank
you both?
You. Yeah,
nice
great.
To see you. Good, good, good. You're getting some nice father-son bonding time in because
that's it. Yeah,
there
yeah.
wasn't a lot of yeah. time spent together on the set of this movie. For obvious reasons.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of scenes together till the end, but we were around. Tom was nice enough to come to dinner with my daughters, which was quite the event in the Damon household. I love the structure of the movie because of, and really of the poem because of yeah. you know how it brings them together.
Mm. Tom, what was your recollection of that dinner? Matt's.
We had a lot of fun.
We did have a lot of fun.
It was. Yeah. We were at a lovely little Italian restaurant in Favignana.
Oh, I thought Matt had cooked.
No.
I wouldn't okay. subject him to that.
Tin of spaghetti.
No, it was lovely. It was really nice. It was one of my favorite things about meeting your kids was the way they chat about your friends. Because they'd be like, do you remember that time when Brad came over? And then I'd be sat there like, I wonder if they're talking about Brad Pitt.
Or just some dude named Brad.
Or just some guy named Brad.
Or when Ben came around.
Yeah.
Ben's, do you know?
Right.
But did it help? Did it help in terms of the bond? Which
oh, absolutely.
Obviously it's a strange one because you know Telemachus can never get that right. Is obviously has never really met Odysseus. He's pining for him, but there's still a bond. Of kind of
for
sorts
sure.
there.
Yeah, absolutely. We had some time before we started shooting in prep where we were fight rehearsing and doing archery training mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And then what is so great about the way Chris works is that he wants everyone to be ready and available. So even on days where I wasn't working, I would be on location. You know, there were periods of time where I didn't work for 2 weeks, but I was still out there on location, staying in the same hotels, should, you know, Mother Nature decide to rain for 3 days and they want to pivot to a different scene.
Of course,
and
of course.
That meant that, you know, every night everyone's eating in the same hotel, everyone's waking up, we're all bumping into each other in the gym. So there really was a strong sense of camaraderie and family, even for the people like myself that weren't on set all day, every day.
And Matt, obviously you had a bit of a head start on this movie because Chris called you. Before he gave you the script, you had what, 2 weeks or so to immerse yourself?
Yeah,
something like that in the poem.
Yeah, I went out
all things Odyssey
and read it again. And it's so interesting the way it changes for you depending on the age you are when you read it and what you. It's just so dense. It's so full of. It's why it's the original story. It's the yeah. foundational story. It kind of appears in every other story that we tell And the adaptation that Chris did, I thought, was really remarkable. I keep saying he's undervalued as a writer because he's so impressive as a director. But I've now read three of his screenplays with Interstellar, Oppenheimer, yeah. and this one, and the two adaptations. You know that Oppenheimer book was very dense. It won the Pulitzer Prize. It was, and he really did a remarkable job adapting that. And I felt that same way about. You know, this very big story and how he sets everything up and ties it together. And it's just built like a Swiss watch. It's just a great piece of writing.
How does he describe Odysseus in that script? Do you remember?
How did he describe him?
Yeah.
Oh.
He looks like Matt Damon.
No, I don't recall. I don't think there was much description. Okay. I mean, Homer describes him, of course, as a complicated man.
Yes. You know. Like Matt Damon.
Yeah, exactly. Like all of us. Yes. Like all of us. Yeah.
How did he describe Telemachus? I got it right this time. I got it right.
Well done.
Right this time. Thank you. I got a cookie.
I remember in our first conversation, one of the things that he felt was very important was to maintain his youth and vulnerability.
Yeah.
You know, it's very easy to read that character and try to find a way to make him feel overly masculine and aggressive and feel like a man, you know, but I think it's really important that in those early scenes when you meet him, you are really seeing a boy and a boy that is pining for his daddy, as Rob says so well in the film.
How old is he in the film? How old?
He's supposed to be 16.
Okay.
And so for me, that was one of the things that we spoke about the most, was finding ways to make him feel very youthful and vulnerable so that as the movie goes on, what's so cool is I have these three fight scenes and each fight scene to me feels like a step in the right direction to becoming a man. Mm-hmm. And one of the coolest things about Chris is that he's a real collaborator. You know, he knows what he wants and he has a real clear sense. But there was a portion of my story that happened very much in the middle, which we ended up saving for the end.
Okay.
And I think that doing that just really was a nice bookend to my character arc for the rest of the film.
Matt, obviously, we're flitting back and forth in time here. We're seeing Odysseus at various stages of his life, apart from things like hair color, beard color, and length, things like that. How did you track those changes? You're going day to day, right?
It's day to day, and they're very clear in the script. And sometimes we'd have to do a change midday. Mm-hmm. But I had my beard, and so it would just be, if I saw the little thing of lacquer come out, I knew we were going young.
It smelled glue.
Okay.
You know, it was dark in the beard and dark in the hair. But obviously we're shooting out of order and we're shooting, you know, every day. And so that was just the down to the hair and makeup department.
Dude, I remember that costume you wear when you're coming home and we were hiking across that mountain. Testament to Matt is I never once heard him complain about anything. Oh, and the shoes that you were wearing that day were horrendous. And we're like climbing over rocks and he had these sandals on and we couldn't, there's like bits of rock and sand in his shoes. He had this beard on and they were, remember they were like clipping the hood to your hair
because of the
wind. Yeah. And I was there, I was in like a suit of armor and like super comfortable.
And looking fabulous.
Yeah, just like the wind was blowing in my hair and shit. And yeah, I was amazed at how, you know, thick skinned you are and how you could take all that stuff on your chin and just do it with a smile.
Couldn't you have just like worn like a pair of boots up the mountain and then switched when you got up the top?
Well, on any shot that's where you see your feet, you're stuck with the period. In fact, it was a big, during the Troy sequence, all my guys, you know, the Odysseus's crew, the guys who, you know, these wonderful group of fantastic actors who were very tough guys, the footwear was a problem at the beginning because it just, you know, we're all middle-aged guys and these sandals that were flat, they were, our feet were shredded, and so it was a learning experience as we went, and then wardrobes trying to mend the shoes and try to reinforce them, and you know it was a
I remember you had that cut for like the entire from the bow and arrow.
You have a scar there.
Oh, let me see,
just that little scar there is just from speed loading and firing arrows.
Oh my God!
But they painted the feather on the arrow for some reason. I think they painted it black. But the paint was so rigid, and when you speed load an arrow, you run your finger along the arrow, and it's only got two feathers on it. And so the bottom feather, so that's from a number of arrows just kept digging into the groove.
That's a pretty cool reminder.
It's a nice tiny little reminder. And then there's one there. Yeah, there's one here on the other side for if I was firing it on the right side.
Right.
Because depending on which side of the bow.
That's pretty cool, actually. I wish I had a scar.
I was going to say, I don't want to turn us into that scene from Jaws, but do you have a scar?
That's pretty sad. That does not compare to the scene from Jaws. Yes, I have a scar. It's like, is that a scar?
I had a booster.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I do have a BCG.
Did you get your COVID booster?
Yeah. I've got that one. But I know that whenever you were shooting the Cyclops scene in that cave, that Chris said to you the first day, smell this place because it's going to get a lot worse over the next couple of weeks?
That was the first, the first thing he said.
But how did that compare to the smell of being stuck inside the Trojan horse with all those middle-aged men?
Well, the Trojan horse was quicker. I mean, we shot that relatively quickly. Okay. The cave, we were there for a couple of weeks and you know, it wasn't the guys, it was the 40 sheep. But it was very funny because he called me in, you know, the first day. He goes, come here. And he takes me. It's my first time in this cave. And it was spectacular, this cave. And he goes, Do you smell it? And I go, what? And he goes, this is the best this place is going to smell. I was like, oh, no. He goes, yep, the 40 sheep are coming in now.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I visited that set and I have to give a shout out to Chris Daniels, the rigger, the stunt rigger.
Unbelievable.
What he did inside that cave is one of the most remarkable feats of rigging. There was like a tiny hole through the top of the cave, and he built a system that was all outside of the set, which would give Chris the biggest amount of room to play with. So all of those stunts you're seeing, the way they manipulated the Cyclops, is all from this rigging system put in.
Yeah.
And like, I went to visit set and Chris was like, come and have a look at what I've done at the top. And it was remarkable. All of the stunt ratchets were ratcheted to the side of the mountain way up the top. It was just a testament to how hard the crew were willing to work for Chris.
That's extraordinary. And did it smell horrible?
I went very early on, so it smelled pretty good when I got there. I wasn't there for the latter part of the shoot.
Were you, because obviously Telemachus is in a slightly different situation to Odysseus and his men. Were you checking in with these guys? Because I know you said this is like every day in this was tougher than the toughest day you've had on pretty much anything else. Were you checking in and them going, how tough is it? And thank God I'm not there.
I mean, I used to love visiting set, and whenever they'd move to a new location, if I had been flown to that place, I'd always go and have a look and just watch Chris work, especially for the Trojan War stuff, like seeing that set and seeing it all on fire. And like, it just was something, it felt like cinema history was happening. And, you know, I could sit in my hotel and watch Netflix or like go to set and witness greatness happening. But yeah, no, we all had dinners after work and stuff. And, you know, I'd loved hearing the stories of what was going on. And I was excited.
Yeah. Matt, toughest day.
I couldn't say.
Just they all blend into one.
And there's a story that I've told that because it makes me laugh. And we were in Iceland and we were shooting night, so it's probably 3 a.m. and it was a driving rain. And Chris called cut, and Himesh and I are walking back to our number ones to do this another take. And Himesh says, hey, Matt, is this the toughest location you've ever been on? And I thought about it. And then I said, I don't know, Himesh. I said, if there was ever a tougher one, it was on this movie and you were there. So you tell me. And then he thought about it. He's like, I don't know. This might be the toughest, but maybe not. Yeah. You know, it was so challenging that it was fun and funny, you know, like we could joke about it. Like, and this whole crew has been with Chris for a long time. And everyone was just looking around at each other, shaking their heads. And getting into the fact that it was that tough, and when we would make our day, there was this feeling of real exhilaration, because nobody's ever done it on IMAX like this, and it's technically very difficult to do that. It's technically really challenging, and just the amount of effort it took from everybody was, and we all were appreciating it as it was happening.
Is this for both of you your odyssey in a way, like the thing that the great?
I hope so. I hope there's not a harder one than this.
Yeah, I don't think there's a sequel.
You never know, guys. I'm gonna let you go on that note. It's been a pleasure.
Matt, thanks. Cool.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Appreciate it.
And there you go. That was Tom Holland and Matt Damon, who is one of the few cast members from the Odyssey who doesn't show up in Spider-Man: Brand New Day. Having said that, I haven't seen the film. He could well have a cameo. And on that note, that is it for this The Odyssey interview special. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And if you do want more, then oh my word, you have got more. For Christopher Nolan himself is our special guest over on this week's regular episode of the Empire Podcast, which is up now in your feeds, both regular and for Empire Plus subscribers. And while we're quickly plugging stuff, our next live show is taking place at King's Place in London on Saturday, September 5th, and we'd love to see you there for some film-related fun. Tickets are now on sale at kingsplace.co.uk. It's going to be an absolute blast, so do please come along, run along, and get your tickets now. And that's enough for me. I'm off to plot a path home, just like Odysseus. And just like Odysseus, terrible decisions await me. Do I go to KFC or the kebab shop? Screw it. I'll do both. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.